Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Gregory from Encinitas.
My name is Gregory, and I am an alcoholic. And hello, everybody. I don't know. I can't imagine. What are you all doing here? Isn't this supposed to be a room of alcoholics? Hello, it's Friday night. I don't know what the heck's going on. And I'd like to thank Jordan for asking me to come up and speak tonight. Except for that's not the truth. The truth is that he said he didn't have another speaker, and he was down in Encinitas begging for speakers at one of my usual meetings. And one of the funny things was he said that I could have a meal after speaking. And so I jumped up out of my chair and I said, I'm your man. And I don't know if anybody can relate to that. If you can relate back in time, can you imagine a free drink? Anybody ever used to like that idea? I don't know. But I'll tell you, that was my favorite drink. You know, I wasn't the type of alcoholic that was real particular about what I drank. That's for damn sure. I remember in my early days of drinking, mayonnaise jars could be filled with the most strange concoctions you can imagine. You know, all pretty much high octane, and it could be like gin mixed with vermouth, which maybe, now I'm on my way to a martini. But no, I got to add some, you know, whiskey, and then why am I putting wine in there? What? Do I know what I'm doing? Whoa. But, you know, that's the way it was, and I'm real happy to be here tonight. Because this is the way it is now. My sobriety date is August 21st, 1989. And I've been continuously sober since that day because there's something called Alcoholics Anonymous. That's pretty cool. And welcome to any newcomers here tonight. Because, I'm trying to live in today. And if you're a newcomer here tonight, that might be what you're trying to do too. It might be a little rougher for you. Might be a little rough around the edges. If you're new tonight and you're in early sobriety, things might seem kind of strange. I mean, number one, it's once again, now I'm back to it's Friday night. What are you doing here if you're a newcomer? You know, you probably want to be to your old watering hole, whatever. And you probably want the familiarity of and the comfort and the ease that they talk about in the book called Alcoholics Anonymous that the alcoholic seemingly gets from drinking alcoholic beverage, and yet you're here tonight, and so I congratulate you and celebrate you already. And I want to congratulate Adam on 2 years of continuous sobriety. That's a great thing. I was talking to him at the break, though, because I twice before had 2 years of sobriety, and I went back to being a drunk. Can you imagine? And both those times that I was sober, I was extremely happy. I felt grounded. You know, I didn't feel, I was lucky. You know, I didn't necessarily feel out of place in the world. I felt grounded and I felt good. And yet I went back to being a drunk. Talk about, when chapter 5 was read tonight and it was so well accentuated by Nancy when she said, cunning, baffling, powerful. It is. It really is. I wish I could stand here. I wish I was going to be a spectacular speaker. You know, I don't know what goes on. I guess I still have an ego. I wish I'd be a spectacular speaker tonight. And if there are newcomers in the room, or anybody, somebody with the 2 years of continuous sobriety that we're celebrating, I wish I could say something that's going to carry them through, you know, so they could be one of the giant success stories. They could be one of the people that dies sober, even though they're suffering from a cunning, baffling, and powerful disease called alcoholism. But it still baffles me to this day. The idea of alcoholism still baffles me, and yet I've been sober this long. So you got to realize Now, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous this time around and had that gift of desperation and really wanted to listen for once, really wanted to pay attention, was willing to, for instance, get a sponsor. I had never done that before. Was willing to read the book and take it to heart. I remember being in Alcoholics Anonymous, my second stint at 2 years of sobriety, and I was trying to memorize the book called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was having success. You know, talk about being gifted, talk about being graced. The way I used to trash myself, I don't know if anyone else in this room is like me, but I was hospitalized for alcoholic poisoning. And I had alcoholic poisoning many times. And I didn't treat myself very well. So the fact that I still have a brain and didn't become a wet brain or something like that is a miracle. There's nothing short of a miracle. And so, you know, I always feel that I am graced in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was somebody that had no control over how much I drank. I had a brother. Well, let me start at the beginning with my mother, father, and family, because I come from a family where my mother was an alcoholic and my father was an alcoholic, and my mother had 9 children, and all 9 children are alcoholic. There's 7 that are left, and 3 of us are sober because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the wondrous news. But I also have a sister and a brother who died from drinking and or drugging. It's not a car-related accident because of it or something. I mean, they imbibed and they died. And that's what alcoholism is. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. And the one brother, the reason I just brought that up, was somebody that learned to maintain his alcohol level. He used to talk about his blood alcohol level, BAL, all the time. He became obsessed with that a little later on. And I was never like that. I wanted to be one of the people that, although I would tell you I was an alcoholic, I used to run around telling people I was an alcoholic since I was a boy. Although I would tell you I was an alcoholic, there were still denial mechanisms going on. Cunning, baffling, powerful. You know, I wouldn't drink in the morning. I was a construction worker. I felt really kind of bad for the lowly guy who wanted to literally knock on the door of a bar or the liquor store so that they could get their pint and six-pack, whatever, for breakfast to get out to the job site. I felt bad for that person. You know, I used to think, wow, what an alcoholic. That same night, I might be telling several people that I'm an alcoholic. But I felt bad for that alcoholic. They wanted some booze in the morning. Hell, that alcoholic was a genius compared to me. I'd get off the job site, drink a six-pack in half an hour easily. Oh, easily. Then I'd be grabbing the second six-pack, and I'd be drinking that on the way to the bar. Then I'd get to the bar, and I'd want a mug or two set up immediately in a shot. But I felt bad for that guy that, you know, wanted his morning drink and wanted to have something for lunch. But I had a brother who died of this disease from drinking a quart of vodka on his way to the hospital where he was supposed to get a liver shot, but his liver was shot. That's alcoholism. But his thing was BAL, blood alcohol level. He became obsessed about talking about that all the time. Like how he would wake up sometimes in the middle of the night to maintain his alcohol level. You know, like have 4 hours of sleep, get up, and have a shot and a beer. And once again, I was an alcoholic who thought, you know, well, that's really weird. And yet, on any given day, I might drink more alcohol than he did on any given day. And yet there was that thing where I didn't drink at work, and I didn't drink in the morning. And the other thing that was interesting about me as an alcoholic was that I was an alcoholic who was better off than any alcoholics that also did drugs. Because, I was an alcoholic. I really loved alcohol. That was my drug of choice. I mean, speak about drugs, it's a contradiction right there. There are all kinds of paradoxes. My drug of choice was alcohol, but, you know, if you did something else, like you wanted to snort some lines of coke or smoke some reefer sticks or something, then what's up, you know, what's up with that? I kind of feel bad for you. You're a drug addict, you know, and, I could feel a little better about myself because I was sort of above the drug, you know, the drug addict, you know, I was doing something legal. Was I? Actually, wait a second. Spontaneously, right as I'm speaking to you right now, I was somebody that bar hopped a lot. I like to go to six places, minimum, a lot of times, on a weekend night. And trust me, I was going to them drunk. I was behind the wheel of a car, and I was drunk. So I was more illegal than maybe somebody staying at home snorting some coke. You know, some of the things about alcoholism just don't make any sense. Cunning, baffling, powerful. Doesn't make any sense. I remember when I was a kid, and both my parents were alcoholics. And I'll tell you, my story was I never brought any friends home. I wasn't going to bring my friends to this environment. That's kind of a little sad and a little bit lonely. And I didn't. I never brought any friends home. Some of my siblings did, but I did not. And one of my favorite things was to be down by the creek, you know, whatever, fishing, or fishing out golf balls, selling golf balls back to the golfers at the golf course, or just going into the woods and hanging out alone, climbing trees, whatever. I liked being alone because I was surrounded by craziness at my household, and so I liked being alone. But I also liked friends. I mean, I'm a human being. I'm a social animal. And I used to love to be able to eat over or stay overnight at friends' houses, but none of them were coming to my house. And what was interesting about that, when I think back on it, the parents of these several kids where I used to sometimes go to their house didn't want their kids to go to my house either. I didn't know that. They didn't tell me that. But I'm sure they didn't want their kids to go to my house. And, that's alcoholism. And I used to say, I'll never grow up to be like my parents. Because I didn't like the alcoholism in my family. You know, it was a place where I couldn't bring anybody home. I didn't like that. And I didn't like the way I was treated. I was abused as a child. And, it's alcoholism that does that. And I didn't like alcoholism. And I didn't like my parents being alcoholic. And so I used to say, well, I'll never grow up to be like that. I was still in grade school when I became an alcoholic. I don't know why, you know. I was about a 12-year-old kid who was kind of mixed up. You can get a picture already of that. And I had a genetic predisposition. And, the next thing you know, that's when that mayonnaise jar used to get filled with some of this stuff in the liquor cabinet. Another interesting thing I did was those golf balls being sold back to the golfers, newspaper route, et cetera, et cetera. I used to want to earn money so I could get booze. And I wanted to be able to have some money for my friends to have some booze with me. And so, I used to do things to earn some money. And I was pretty generous. No, I wasn't. I was going to say I was pretty generous, maybe get a case of quartz. And I had two friends. I changed my friends right around that age, 12 years old, to I had like two very close friends. But I could see that they didn't like drinking, and I did. And I'm hooked up with two other guys that really like drinking like me. And so I would love to take my money and get us a case of quartz. What's funny is one of these kids that was involved was so precocious physically, with a beard and everything, as a 12-year-old, believe it or not, he could go into the bar and get cases of beer. I love that guy. That guy is, that's a good guy, But if he wasn't around, I don't know if anybody else in this room ever did this, but there are people sometimes that hang out near a liquor store, and if you tell them you'll buy them a bottle of wine or a six-pack or whatever, they'll go in and get you something if you're a young teen. They won't think that's that bad, especially if you're pretty bold about it. And when it came to alcohol, I was bold. I don't know about anybody else in this room, once again, but I was bold. When it came to alcohol, I wanted it. And, I was kicked out of bars a couple of times because I thought I'd get in there and I'd sit with my friend Dennis. And, he had the beard. And I started letting my whiskers grow. And there was about four of them. And, I'm like 16 and I'm trying to sit in the bar and being shot down. But I'd go back. And, if for some reason I didn't have some money, like my mom maybe took all the money from my paper route, and things weren't going so good at the golf course with the golf balls, because whatever, maybe I was slacking off. I don't know if anybody can relate to that either, slacking off behind the idea of alcoholism. But, if I didn't have the money for booze, I was pretty bold. I would go in your garage or I would get inside your house and I would take the booze from you. I did a lot of beanies as a teenager. And, yeah, the statute of limitations is up on that. I guess I can say that right out loud here tonight. I used to do a lot of beanies. But I tell you what, here's the funny thing about the alcoholic mind, my mind anyhow, which, by the way, although there are some facts involved in my story, I mean, this is my story, this true events and whatnot, a lot of what you might hear from me tonight is my opinion about alcoholism, which I already claimed, though I don't really know that much about it. I wanted to be the authority, remember? I came up to the mic and said, I hope I'm the authority, but I'm not. Because to me, alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And so back to when I was a teen, and if I needed a way to get some booze and I was doing B&E's, this is so funny. I would go in your house and take the booze out. I might see cash in your house. I might even see jewelry. You might have some really nice electronics. Whatever, there could be stuff in your house of value. I would leave all that alone. I just wanted the case of beer. I wanted the bottle of booze or two, whatever. And I was out quick. And when I would do my beanies, I knew how to get in. I didn't destroy your property. Like I said, I didn't take your jewelry or even cash. And so a lot of times I'd leave the house and I'd be patting myself on the back as such an honest boy. What a good boy. I just pulled a B&E, but what a good boy. You know, I just needed my booze. And that's how alcoholism was for me. The whole time, alcoholism was like that for me. You know, consequently, I went through a lot of jobs. I don't know if that's true about anybody else in this room either, but the number of jobs I've had over the years is unbelievable. Because, you know, it's tough to be an alcoholic and hold down a job. I don't know if that's true for anybody else, but for me it was. Because like I said, I used to love to poison myself by pouring in so much booze because I'd wait. You know, I was waiting until it was nighttime and thinking, you know, I wait until it's a respectable hour to drink, and yet I pour so much in that the next morning I'm still drunk even. Forget hangovers. I often woke up drunk. I mean really drunk or came to. And so, I'd have to call in sick a lot. That doesn't go over that good with employers. I remember one time I had this job, and I was a truck driver, and I called in drunk. I didn't call in sick. You know, I mean, you can call in sick to a job, and then you can come to work maybe the next day. But I called in drunk, and I wanted to tell the boss, you know, hey, I've got to be real honest with you. There's no way I could drive the truck today because I'm drunk today. But I'll be okay tomorrow. You know, I promise I'll be in on time, and I'm not going to drink today. That Friday, I think this was a Monday. You know, Mondays and Fridays are weird. That Friday, I got the slip that says you don't work here anymore. And what's interesting is they loved me. I always finished my route. They would actually even add destinations onto my route, and I finished my route always. There were other truck drivers, you know, always complaining, and they couldn't finish their routes, the traffic, this, whatever. And, you know, that's another fascinating thing sometimes about the alcoholic, is that they could be such a wonderful worker, they could really get engrossed in something, you know, until they get drunk, or they could really gear up for something. I know, firsthand. I don't know if it's happened to anyone else in the room. I suspect, but I don't know. I'm not going to accuse anybody in this room of anything, you know, but I know that for me, a lot of times I would gear up for something and then just not even show up for it. I went to job interviews and got jobs I loved. Talk about having a lot of jobs. I was hired and then never showed up. I mean, that's the way my life was. And, you know, that's alcoholism. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And, you know, what's interesting is that you can be going through a really crazy lifestyle. And you can kind of still think you got it together, you know. Because I can get another job. It's funny. It's really funny. Or you think that things will be different. When you read in chapter 3 about the different ways of drinking, or switching from scotch to brandy, or whatever, you know, swearing off, getting all healthy, you know, you're starting to do all kinds of calisthenics, and maybe you start jogging or whatever, and you improve your diet, and you quit for a little while. And then all of a sudden, though, you become really thirsty about a week later when you're really healthy. And you try and make up for lost time even. Oh, wow. Alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. It really is. And so, you know, this time around, when I got that gift of desperation, which you can imagine, I could go on about how crazy my life is behind alcoholism, but I want to talk more about the gift of desperation. When I finally felt sick and tired enough, and when I had already been sober a couple times before, and I had a taste of the fact that, you know, life can be pretty good. Life can really be pretty good. And it doesn't take much. That's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous, is it's a simple program. Like, there's only one rule. I don't know if the whole room knows the rule or not. If you don't, I'm going to say it. I might even speak a little louder while I talk about the one rule. And it's Rule 62. Don't take yourself so damn seriously. And you can find that in the 12 and 12. You know, if you actually want to get wild and crazy and really, you know, stretch the program a little bit, you can go to the traditions part in the 12 and 12. And you can read in tradition 4 why that came about. And it's funny. And Rule 62 is a way to live a life. And I didn't know that, you know. The fact that there's only one rule is pretty fascinating, but the fact that you can apply it to almost anything is amazing. I was in my third meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and along with the gift of desperation, up comes this man to me. He walks up to me and he told me, "I'm your sponsor." Wow. Talk about being graced, blessed, whatever. Because, you know, I was still the same guy. I had the gift of desperation. That's the number one thing. That brought me to the room called Alcoholics Anonymous. But was I going to get a sponsor? Was I going to get feely, touchy? Was I going to talk about my emotions with another man? Was I going to really open up and talk about shortcomings? You know, where I felt I falter in life? You know, how I can be stubborn? You know, the fact that I'm a cheat, that I like to lie. Sometimes I lie for no reason. Not today. Today I have to have a reason. No. But when I was a drunk, sometimes, you know, I'd catch myself. I'd be telling lies to someone for no reason. There wasn't a reason. I was just telling a lie. That's wacky. That is really weird. But I don't know about anyone else in this room. But I know when I got that gift of desperation, what I was getting out of. I knew how crazy my mind could be at times, and how it progressively was getting worse. I didn't want to slip into dementia early, maybe in my 30s. I didn't want my health to go so far down that I became like my brother, who was my younger brother, who's one of the siblings that died with that bottle of vodka on the way to the hospital. I didn't want my liver to be totaled. I knew it already hurt and was a bit enlarged. But when this guy came up to me and he said, "I'm your sponsor," I don't know, in a way, that's nothing short of a miracle. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It's about miracles like that, because I probably wasn't going to get a sponsor. I probably wasn't going to do that, because I told you how I was as a boy, how I could be alone, self-supporting, whatever, or even supporting my friends with the booze, or hanging out in the woods and feeling just fine about being alone, most of the time, except for when I felt lonely. And you know, in the book called Alcoholics Anonymous, when they talk about the conviviality of drinking or whatever and whatnot, you know, I remember that too, is that there were times when I felt a part of a group, and there were times when alcohol worked for me and it made me a social animal and whatnot. But there were times when I was drunk or couldn't get drunk or got drunk too fast or wished I wasn't in a group of people or was in a group of people and they were all having fun. And I realized that I was lonely. And that's the kind of weird stuff that goes on with the disease of alcoholism. And, you know, sometimes you just don't know how to get out of it. And I had times in my life when I just didn't know how to get out of it. I knew there were opportunities right in front of me. And I knew I wanted to live a different life. Because obviously that boy didn't want to become a drunk. And obviously, since I got drunk, sober the first time when I was a teen, obviously, I wanted sobriety. I felt great about, when I was 19, I felt great about being sober. I was sober for a couple years, like I said, first time. I turned 21, though. hey, wait a second, can anybody think of a better reason? You know what I mean? I'm legal now, I got to go out and experience it. You know, it's just amazing how cunning, baffling, and powerful the disease of alcoholism is. Because next month I'll have 22 years of continuous sobriety, God willing. And yet my brain still plays tricks with me. I love being sober. Let me repeat that. I love being sober. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to love being sober, and I do. Yet my mind will play tricks with me. Sometimes I think I really got it going on. Sometimes I'm really sober or whatever. I remember I was about 15 years sober, and right around my anniversary time in August, I had this recurring dream. I started having this recurring dream that, well, under a certain set of circumstances, I'll be going back out. And I was like, what? Well, you know, and who could blame me? Under a certain set of circumstances, I'd have to drink again. If I was stranded on a desert isle, and there was no water supply, however, a big cargo ship sank, but all the cases of beer floated up on my island. Now I have a water source. Beer is primarily water. And so there you go. I've got a reason to go back out. And I thought, you know, the obsession was gone. When I was early in sobriety, I used to have a lot of drunk dreams. I don't know if that's ever happened to anybody else in this room. I suspect. I have my suspicions. Because alcoholism is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I used to have a lot of drunk dreams. And they were weird. Sometimes I thought it was kind of a party, and the party was back on. A lot of times, though, I thought, now I've lost my sobriety. I've lost my sobriety, date. I'm back to being trashed. I lost the grace I had, whatever. How can I go back to the group and tell the people? You know, whatever. This really sucks. Thankfully, you wake up, and you have a chance to be sober another day. But that's funny, the way the mind works, that 15 years in, I can have that dream. And, you know, for me, to be able to drink again is not a dream. It's a nightmare. I don't know about anybody else in this room, but for me to drink again is a nightmare. It really is. It's weird. I told you how my mind works with the B&Es. Another thing that was interesting was if I smoked the right amount of reefer while drunk, primarily I love to drink, though, but while I was drunk, I could be driving and I could be shit-faced. I could be driving and I could maybe be in trouble. When I see a cop car, I think, well, you know, maybe I'm going to be in trouble. And then I could say, no, I'm magic. I'm going to think myself invisible. And by extension, my car is now invisible. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. That's my mind as an alcoholic, you know. I'm willing to admit that in front of a group of people that's my mind. And I'm willing to admit in front of a group of people that my mind, even at 15 years sober or at 21 years sober, doesn't matter. It still might want to play some tricks on me. And that's alcoholism. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. And so this guy comes up and he's my sponsor now. That's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. My favorite chapter in the book called Alcoholics Anonymous is There Is a Solution. Because, you know, finally there's a solution to alcoholism. And it's right there. It's in print. I love that chapter. It's a really easy one. And once again, I might embarrass myself, but I've read the chapter hundreds of times. And guess what? This time I don't have it memorized, even though the number's big how many times I've read it. But you know what? I love to go back to that chapter because I want to know how simple it is. I want to know it's one day at a time. Easy does it. Keep coming back. I want to know there is a solution. And the solution's pretty easy. There's two components in the chapter. One of them is the tremendous fact. The tremendous fact is that we're all here tonight on a Friday night sober, especially you guys. That's really tremendous. But that's the tremendous fact, is that we're here for each other tonight on a Friday night in summertime. It's kind of a warm night. Why we're not all out having, I was going to say a cold one. That would have been the dumbest statement I said up here, a cold one. You know, that's probably the dubious luxury of a non-alcoholic. We'd be having the cold ones, the cold dozen, you know. And I'm just so happy that I realized some of these things because of that book called Alcoholics Anonymous and my sponsor. He told me Rule 62 on the very first night, and he made me live the one rule. He probably saw the deer in the headlights type thing. He probably realized where I was coming from. Yeah, I'm sure he did. As it turns out, he really did. He knew where I was coming from. And that's the tremendous fact. One person willing to open up with another alcoholic and let you know where they're coming from, so you can then let them know where you're coming from. That's the tremendous fact. One alcoholic working with another alcoholic. That's what it's all about. Or a group of alcoholics on a Friday night staying sober. That's what it's all about. That's the tremendous fact. And the second thing in that chapter called There Is a Solution is there's a great fact. And they can be balanced or not. The tremendous fact can actually even incorporate the great fact, in my opinion. If you're sitting here tonight and you're a newcomer and you think the God thing is troublesome, I don't see why you have to think like that. There's no point in it. Because the tremendous fact can be spelt with a capital T. And the fact that there's Alcoholics Anonymous, or even just one group of Alcoholics Anonymous that can become your higher power, you're in great shape. You're in great shape if that can happen for you. And it happened for me. But I came around to realizing a little bit more about what the great fact in that chapter means too. Is that I can have spirituality in my life. I can have a higher power in my life. It's the group and even beyond. And that's nothing short of miraculous. That took some time though. But I always loved the tremendous fact. I still love it today. That's why I'm here tonight. Because I love the... and the dinner. I get dinner afterwards. That's why I'm really here tonight. Anything else I tell you is probably just a bunch of BS. Actually, I have no idea. I'm not even positive. Set me up for a tape, by the way. Because a lot of times when I come to the microphones, I haven't the slightest idea what I'm going to say or in what order. Because you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to be extemporaneous. It allows me to be spontaneous today. It took some time. I remember when I was a newcomer, I never even wanted to raise my hand and share in a meeting. Too frightened. Too frightened of you people. Because you know where I'm coming from. I told you where I was as a little boy. And as a teenager, it was maybe even worse in my early teens. I was dreadfully shy. There's no way when I first got around, and it took a while, I didn't want to raise my hand. I thought I would have a heart attack, literally, when at 90 days they told me to get up to the podium and take a 90-day chip. I thought I was going to have a heart attack just to get up and thank the group. And yet today, I feel comfortable enough in myself that I can look another person in the eye, I can even talk in a group of people. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because of this sponsor that said, I'm your sponsor. And he taught me Rule 62 and how it can apply to everything in your life. And it can. You know, when you think you're having a resentment, who are you to have a resentment? Rule 62. Why are you taking yourself so damn seriously? You're working step four, maybe for the second time. Maybe the first time. Maybe you're not working it, but you're sort of working it. Maybe you don't have the pen and paper. But you know you ought to be on step four, and your sponsor's saying, you know, let's do step four. And some of the stuff's starting to go through your mind. Well, my sponsor told me, for every negative thing you write down, there's got to be something positive in your life. What is it that brought you to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous? Something positive. How come you survived so long? Something definitely positive, he told me. He says, for everything that you think that's so negative while you're doing step four, he says, an inventory like that won't be any good. There's no balance in it. He says, if you're struggling with it, we can go over it while you're doing it. And we can look for the positive flip side to anything that you could tell me that's negative. And he did it. He was ready and able to do that with me. That's pretty cool, you know, because he got that kind of thing from his sponsor, and I got it from him. And it's amazing. That's how Alcoholics Anonymous works. Because, you know, for me, there's no way I would do Alcoholics Anonymous if it was tough. But it's the simplest thing I ever saw. I remember when I was 2 years sober up in Los Angeles, and I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings every day, but I didn't have a sponsor. And I was trying to memorize the book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was doing a fairly good job. But it wasn't in my heart, and I didn't have that sponsor. I wasn't opening up to anyone. I wasn't sponsoring anyone, and I wasn't being sponsored. I thought I was running the show. And I'll tell you right now, that's a tough place to be. That's a really tough place to be. However, don't get me wrong, as I said earlier, I was still unbelievably grateful and happy to be sober then. But I went back to being a drunk because I didn't fully open up. I didn't start to grow in the program. I was living on that pink cloud for like 2 years. You know how they talk about the pink cloud in Alcoholics Anonymous? When you're up, when you're realizing that sobriety is the greatest thing, the greatest gift, which can happen any given day. But for me, it was happening day after day. How lucky, huh? Yet I thought, you know, because of alcohol being cunning, baffling, and powerful, I thought I had to go back to that because maybe that's even better, even though my life was great. It's a funny disease, I'll tell you that. I wish I could say I had a handle on it. Like, I think when I first came up to this microphone, I started to say, you know, I wish I had the real solution, a better one than the book, because that's my ego. Sometimes I think, maybe I have the answer for somebody or some bodies. But you know what? I just have my story, and I can share my story with somebody else, and that's the solution. And, you know, when it came around to working the steps, my sponsor had me writing on all the steps, not just step four. And so it became a great learning process. And then down in Encinitas, there's this thing called the Step Study Group that goes for a whole year, and they go through the steps, and you write on all the steps. It's like, it goes for a whole year. I mean, that's like 2.5 college semesters. You study the steps for like forever, it seems. And you really go through the process and you do a lot of writing. And you share at group level a lot of stuff too, if you're willing. And it's a great step study they've been doing for many years down in Encinitas. And it goes on and it's a great thing. I did it 6 years in a row because I figured, you know, I'm going to fortify myself. And for me, that's the type of thing that works in my life. One day at a time I live life, like they told me. Because if I didn't realize how simple the program was and I started to complicate it again, I'm serious. I'm afraid I'll go back to drinking. If I complicate my life for this alcoholic, there's a darn good chance I can go back to drinking. But there I was in L.A. And I was thinking to myself, you know, I have this thing kind of beat. And I didn't. And I thought I could take the show on the road and went back to see my old friends in northern New Jersey where I came from. And the rest is history. I almost immediately upon getting back that way became a drunk again. And that's the way alcoholism is. You know, you think you're sober and you think you love being sober, and alcoholism will take that away from you really quick if you're not diligent. And like I say, it's really simple. I used to think, nothing can be that simple. And when I was doing that program where I didn't really have a sponsor and wasn't taking it to heart, I thought it was too simple. I thought you guys were trying to teach me kindergarten stuff, and I was a big boy now. I didn't know what I really needed was kindergarten stuff, and that's what I needed. And I used to look at the little sayings that were said, like, keep coming back, easy does it, one day at a time, but for the grace of God. I used to look at that stuff and say, you know what? I feel sorry for these people that need some simplistic stuff like that in their life. Well, you know, my mind was so judgmental, I used to think, well, does that mean that they're simple-minded? Does somebody think I should be simple-minded? And you know what? I can't believe that this time around in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that simple-mindedness is the most amazing thing that can happen for an alcoholic. Especially like me. So I learned rule 62. There's only one rule. And I learned how to take a path along that line of living that one rule where I don't have resentments against you because I have no right to take myself that seriously. I don't, you know, it doesn't matter what you think about me. It doesn't matter if there's some negativity maybe going on about me. Why should that matter? I don't need to go back in time and think about the B&Es I did or whatever I did. Worse, It doesn't matter. Whatever I did back in time, I don't need to go back in time and say, well, you know what? When it comes to my sex inventory, for instance, I ruined 17 women's lives. What? What are you talking about? Like I'm that big of a deal? Yeah, right. Trust me, I am not that big of a deal. And, you know, I need to know how Rule 62 works. I'm standing in the grocery line. I don't know if this has ever happened to anybody else in this room. And it's the quick line. I'm a bachelor. I've got 7 items, and I got to get going. And somebody's in the line, and they got too many items. Oh, man. You better believe I'm pissed off. All of a sudden, I feel like I've had 19 drinks again, and you better get out of my way. You know, all of a sudden, my mind wants to play tricks on me. I have a resentment against somebody. I don't even know this person. And the resentment's starting to grow. And then all of a sudden, I have to say to myself, uh-oh, Rule 62. And then I have to say to, I don't know about anybody else, but then I have to live a different way. I've been standing in lines before in the grocery store, and I started to feel that irritableness. And then I say to myself, I see somebody behind me. And I say, okay, I'm starting to defuse it. I'm saying the serenity prayer or something. Or I'm smiling and I'm saying, well, wait a second. I'm a representative of Alcoholics Anonymous. Or I'm a representative of myself and my higher power. What am I projecting to the world? And so I have to smile to myself then. And then I have to say to the person, well, this person is more pissed off than me behind me. And I have to say, hey, you know what? You look like you might be in a hurry. I'd like you to go in front of me. And I've done that many times. And you know what? People will go in front of you too, damn it. Can you imagine? They must have the ears in, even if they're sober. They're like, yeah, get out of my way. And I'm like, that's cool. That's cool. And I've let several people go. And then I've come to realize that, you know, whoever it is in the line that I think's jamming up the line, that really what I should be doing is smiling at that person, being courteous and friendly as can be, maybe saying a prayer for that person. I don't know what's going on in their life, that they feel that it's a 10-item line, but they've got 15 items, but they got to go. Maybe they really do. Maybe there's illness in their family. I don't know what's going on. They got to go pick up their kid, and they're running late. I got to realize there are 1,001 things that could get somebody else going in this world, same as me. There are 1,001 things in this world that could start getting me going, you know? That grudge concept, that brainstorming. And I don't mean the modern day definition of the word brainstorm, where, you know, the steering committee for this meeting comes up with some better ideas for the meeting. No. I mean, get an old dictionary and look what they mean. Try and figure out what they mean in the book called Alcoholics Anonymous when they say the grudge and the brainstorm are the dubious luxuries of the non-alcoholic. The brainstorm is that fracas, it's that circus, it's the circus with the mean clowns too. The circus that's going around in your head whereby maybe you're going to get some revenge a little later on under the cloak of darkness because somebody treated you wrong. They might have said the wrong thing to you. You know what I mean? They might not have used their most polite words to you. Early in the morning, that night, you know, maybe you got to put on some dark ninja suit. Whatever. You've got to get out there and you've got to get back. It's payback time. Drink or no drink, my mind can sometimes play that game. I'm just being honest with you guys. And so I'm so glad there's Alcoholics Anonymous on a Friday night. Because here it is, a Friday night, a little bit warm. And, you know, as an alcoholic, I think I'd probably belong, I don't know the area, but I bet you I could find a bar. Oh, yeah, that's another funny thing about alcoholism. Anybody ever feel they had a sort of a sense of radar? Or maybe even like when you're blind drunk, you become like a bat. And maybe you have a sense of like sonar. And you can get you to drink or drunk. You know what I mean? Or, you know, maybe you start learning certain things in life that if for some reason, for me it was rare. It was really rare. My drug of choice was alcohol. But it was really rare. But every now and then if I wanted some drugs, it was extremely rare. But I knew where to go. You look for the really ugly, square, tall buildings called the projects. You know, or maybe you know where Martin Luther King Boulevard is. Let's go. Let's go. There are people there that will be, there are entrepreneurs down that way that will be glad to help you out, even if you're new to some city. Here's what's great, though. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship that has grown to the point where I can be in a different city. I've done plenty of traveling in my life, in sobriety, plenty of times, for work, vacation, whatever, for whatever reason, family, I've done plenty of traveling. You'd be surprised how easy it is to find a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous by just a quick dialing on the phone to the central office in cities, even small towns. Remember the song, "There's a girl my lord in a flatbed Ford and slowing down to take a look at me," and it talks about Winslow, Arizona, some little town called Winslow, Arizona. I've been to an AA meeting in Winslow, Arizona, traveling cross country. And I'll tell you, it was a great meeting. There were some Native Americans there. There were some great people there who, as usual, welcomed me with open arms. It's the biggest, bestest family I've ever found. You know where I'm coming from. I told you what my childhood was like. I told you my family of origin. I told you I wanted to be in other people's families as a boy. I told you I wanted to eat at their dinner tables. I wanted to sleep over with my friends at their houses. They never came to my house. But you know, when I found out that Alcoholics Anonymous was a big family where you could be welcomed the way you are always in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm nothing short of amazed, still to this day. In other words, I'm up here talking tonight in front of you guys, and I've never met you before, but you feel like family to me. You really do. And nobody's thrown any tomatoes. I know I'm not a great circuit speaker. I've spoken maybe 40 times before at microphones, but I know I'm not some circuit speaker. And I do it extemporaneously, as I said. I'm not sure what's going to come out of my mouth. I never wrote it down. I didn't want to memorize it. I don't want to memorize my story. I still don't to this day. Sometimes I think if I really came up with a clever one, the next thing you know, I'd be a really famous circuit speaker. Once again, there's my ego. Me, Gregory, one of the most famous circuit speakers in AA ever. Unbelievable. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? But you know what? I'm glad that although I know that I have that going on in my life, my ego, my mind might play that funny little trick, I know where I belong. I belong speaking extemporaneously in front of a group full of alcoholics. And you know what? It doesn't matter if I even jump around a little bit in my story. I tell you right now, my head used to jump around a little bit behind booze. You drink a quart of tequila, and you're out there. You drink a quart of tequila, and you're out there. My mind used to be jumbled. And the fact that I can come up in front of a group of people and put even one sentence together, in some respects, is a miracle. It really is. I feel blessed for that. And so when that sponsor was teaching me things about Rule 62, one of the other things that he taught me that was pretty fascinating, it stayed with me throughout all these days of sobriety, was he taught me that since both him and his wife were both good members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he had two little ones, an infant of like 10 months, and a 2.5-year-old daughter and a little boy, Chris, nicknamed Crisscross, he taught me I can be a babysitter so they can go to a meeting together. What the hell? That was weird. But Rule 62, who would I have been to take myself so damn seriously? And consequently, still to this day right now, I still love kids, and I teach in Sunday school every Sunday. That's really phenomenal. In my non-denominational church in Encinitas, I actually teach Sunday school. Now, that can't happen. Alcoholics don't teach Sunday school. And I sing in their choir over there. And, I've worked all the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous several times, like I already said, in that structured group step study that goes on for a whole year. Talk about a commitment. Who wants to commit to the steps where you're writing on it extensively, sharing at group level even? If you want to, nobody's going to force you to do anything. That's what's great about Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody's going to force you to do anything. But if you want to dive in, trust me, I know from experience, you can really dive in. You can set these chairs up, or if somebody already has that commitment, you can come here and help them. You could be the third person helping with those chairs. You know, if somebody doesn't jump on that cake thing tonight, they're missing out on a cakewalk. You know, it talks about it once again right in our literature. It says maybe you're not the person to get in front of the microphone. Maybe that isn't the way you operate. But it talks about the people that bring a cake to the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They set up the coffee and they bring some cake for the people in the meeting to enjoy, and they say that's some great 12-step work. It says it right in that funny book, once again, the 12 and 12, which, by the way, at the beginning of this meeting, I thought it was nice that the traditions were read. Maybe that might be tradition here. Oh, pardon my redundancy. And, I think that's nice because that study I'm talking about, that yearly study thing, the last couple of months of the year, the traditions are done. You know, most of the time is spent on the steps, but then they get into the traditions too. And that opened my eyes. So, you know, if you're not a newcomer in the meeting tonight, if you've got a whopping 2 years of sobriety, for instance, I don't know if anybody in this room has like 2 years of sobriety today. Maybe Adam does. But if you're somebody like that, you know what? Try out the traditions. Something new. And there's a lot of literature in Alcoholics Anonymous. I recommend it all. Dr. Bob, the good old timers, AA Comes of Age. Get the grapevine. Bill, he was temporarily, you know, he was willing to jump in, be of service, even if it was only temporary. You know, he loves this. He probably loves those temporary things. Do something for 2 weeks and you're free. No, just kidding. But anyhow, a temporary commitment, in my opinion, is as good as a permanent commitment. Like I said, if you're the third person that comes in here and makes it easier for whoever's setting up the chairs, God bless you. That's great. That's great service work. Why let one person do it alone? That's not how Alcoholics Anonymous works anyhow. It's not one person setting up the chairs alone, just like it's not one person working the program alone. So my recommendation is dive into the program. You can, I tell you that much. Like I say, I found it in dozens and dozens of cities, 8 different states, whatever, while traveling, while working different places, or whatever. I just was whispering behind the mic there. I was finding out how much time I had left. It was starting to seem like it was close, and so I gave myself, or I got a 5-minute warning. We worked that together. Together we figured out I got about 5 more minutes. Now how I'm going to wrap this up and get every newcomer here to stay? Damn. I don't know how the hell I'm going to do that. But you know what's interesting? Is I genuinely wish I could. That's what's interesting. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. I genuinely wish that I could get every newcomer in this room tonight to stay sober for years. I want you to be able to surpass me if you're young enough. If you're not, whatever. Go for it. Live to 110. That's cool. Maybe you can do it if you're sober. I know that from personal experience, the way I felt at times in my life, and looking back at my illustrious alcoholic career, doing my B&Es, whatever other weird, crazy stuff I did, as a drunk, especially the drunk and driving, I was a bad drunk driver. I am really lucky to be alive. I feel even luckier that I didn't crash a car and kill somebody else, for instance. It happens. It happens every day. It happens every day. Alcoholics are killing people, and they didn't mean to. That's why the disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. That's the disease of Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, that's the disease of alcoholism, is that it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, another funny thing, though, about when I was in the disease and a drunk, is that, you know, I thought I was doing fine, oftentimes. Here's another interesting little aside, is for a while there, I would only drink beer, you know, like they talk about in chapter 3. Of course, I might drink 30 bottles in one night, no problem. But I would only drink beer, and I decided I would only ride a motorcycle. I'd give up on cars and trucks because, it's kind of dangerous. It's a car or a truck. It's a big machine, and I get drunk too often. So I'll just drive a motorcycle. Of course, I drove one of the biggest motorcycles there ever was, and of course, I sometimes drove it when I was blind drunk, and maybe even with both tires. Because I wasn't spending the money on the tires, I was going to say, can you imagine the mind working that way? I could have caused as big an accident on a huge motorcycle as you could ever cause in a car. And yet I thought, you know, hey, this is fine. This is okay. And that's how alcoholism works. And I'll tell you how Alcoholics Anonymous works. It's realizing that none of that's okay. And what is okay is easy does it. One day at a time. Live and let live. But for the grace of God, keep coming back. That's a reality. And that's a reality I can stay sober in. I really can. Thanks for having me over here tonight. I hope you all stay sober. Good day.